98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Weekly Blast.
Dating back to the Orlando bubble, the Suns have won 44 of their last 58 NBA games. Their record against really good teams makes you forget how most of this team has zero playoff experience. Even their highly regarded head coach has never won a playoff series. And yet, thanks to Chris Paul, it might not matter one bit. Now, largely because of their Hall of Fame point guard, the Suns might go from a 10-year drought to the number one seed almost overnight. And that means they're going to get precious playoff experience now in the regular season with a slew of big games that matter. But mostly it's because of Paul's temperament. No big moment is too big. No shot is too scary. He is rock solid and perfectly at home inside the fire, and that's a huge deal to a basketball team, which generally includes guys who do not want to touch the basketball in clutch situations. It's incredibly a big deal with a basketball team that has very little playoff experience. Now, in Arizona, no free agent signing will ever top Randy Johnson, who won four consecutive Cy Young Awards and a World Series. But I think Chris Paul confirmed his MVP candidacy last night, and I really believe the basketball world would love to give him the award as a career achievement award for lifting every team he has ever played for. And this basketball team in Phoenix, well, this one might be his crowning achievement. All right, today's Bickley Blast brought to you by my great friends at Chapman BMW. Test drive the ultimate driving machine at the newly renovated Chapman BMW in Chandler at Chapman BMW on Camelback. You can find them online at chapmanbmw.com.
Well, that's what I told our guys. They may not find anybody that wants it more for them than me, because I've been in games like this, and it's gratifying when you execute your game plan somewhat. But then when guys just will each other to win, I just felt like we hung in there with each other tonight. Even when they made runs, I didn't see anybody dropping their heads. I could see their eyes focused on me, waiting for the next play and waiting for the next coverage. That's a level of growth, and it's an experience that we have to have as a team for us to grow.
Yeah, Monty Williams after the game, I love the way you put that. Nobody wants it more for them than I do. And I think he's exactly right. I think the members of the Phoenix Suns last night did lean heavily on each other. And I'm not saying it's completely gone. I mean, it's impossible not to be on some sort of Phoenix Suns high if you're a fan right now after that game last night, because it was just a tremendous basketball game. But in a lot of ways, Bick, it washes away some of the concerns, a lot of the concerns that we had about the Suns playing down to competition or, hitting those lulls where they would let teams back up off the mat and get back into games and make things that much harder for themselves in those crunch time situations. Last night's game against a good team that, let's face it, the Utah Jazz, that's only the third time they've lost back-to-back games all year. They're in danger of losing three in a row because they got Portland next. But that is a team that has been laser focused pretty much all season long. And to have that level of intensity, consistency, and focus last night, man, that makes you feel good as a Suns fan.
Yeah, and I really marveled again, as I have for most of the season, at just how in control Chris Paul always is. And I can't overstate this enough, the fact that when you've got a point guard who not only can handle pressure moments, but feels perfectly at home in them, what an asset that is to any basketball team, much less a team like the Suns that will be going into the playoffs with very little experience in those moments. And when you get a guy that is just in the moment, calm, super competitive, and you just know everything is okay with him. And it's elementary. It's something that's very elementary to the sport of basketball. If you've got a point guard who can handle the big moments, you've got something very special. And Steve Nash was the same way. There's no panic in Steve Nash in endgame situations. But that's not always true in the NBA. I remember once, I forget what playoff game it was, but Grant Hill hit a couple of huge free throws at the end to win. Maybe it was against that Lakers series. But he had told me after the game that there were a couple of teammates on the floor with him who were like, as soon as he passed the ball to him, it came right back to him. And he's like, okay, I know what that means. And so Chris Paul brings this element to the Phoenix Suns, and it's so valuable. And he's had so many positive effects on so many different elements of this team. It's it's worked out as well as anyone could have hoped.
Even just minor stuff last night, and I know this kind of circulated on social media last night. I didn't notice it in real time, but after Donovan Mitchell missed a big free throw, one of my big pet peeves, by the way, is, you know, do you need to step off the line after a missed free throw to get high fives?
No,
you just missed the free throw. But his teammates did that, and then Chris Paul kind of strolls over, and it's just a little jab, little maneuver to get inside the head of the opponent. He sticks out his hand to give Donovan Mitchell a high five, and Mitchell kind of slapped his hand away.
Yeah, and he slapped his hand away in a way that you knew that he had accomplished what he meant to accomplish. It was a real kind of jerk face move. But
not as jerk face as Rudy Gobert.
But not if he plays for you.
Yes.
If he plays for you, you love it because it works, and Chris Paul is ruthless. And I mean that in a really good way. And it's, I think last night, I really do believe that there is going to be a groundswell of people who look at Chris Paul and go, this is our MVP this year. And,
well,
and it's going to extend beyond what he's done with Phoenix, but this is just a pattern. Every team Chris Paul has left has never recovered. I guess you could say the Clippers have recovered, but.
Sure. Took them a while.
Completely different roster. They had to dismantle the Lob City team before.
Every team he's gone to has been markedly improved. What he did, I didn't think there'd be a chance he could top what he did in Oklahoma City. His numbers are prime of his career. They're better than they were in the prime of his career.
And the biggest number is the win percentage.
Yeah. That's what's huge.
To get OKC a 5 seed last year, that was amazing.
Yeah.
And people marveled at it, and he finished 7th in the MVP voting last year.
Mm-hmm.
I was on the Athletic website today, and they've got their article of looking at the postseason awards at this point, because things are starting to heat up. Rudy Gobert or Ben Simmons for Defensive Player of the Year, Zach Harper's 2021 NBA Awards rankings update. On the question of MVP... His top five right now, from 5 to 1, Steph Curry, Joel Embiid, Giannis, Damian Lillard, Nikola Jokic. So Chris Paul not even in the top five. He's in a group of honorable mentions, along with LeBron James, Donovan Mitchell, Luka Doncic, and James Harden.
I think that's going to start to change.
I think Harden's too low. I think Chris Paul's too low.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I still think it's fairly wide open, and I think as the Suns continue to play and win these games, and especially if they get the number one seed, and it's there for them now, if they get the number one seed, this is I could really see this happening, because Chris Paul is, I mean, everybody across the league understands how good he is, and he's never really had his just rewards, if you will.
Yes.
He's made a ton of money, but he's never had... he's never had that championship moment.
Well, the way Chris Paul plays lends itself to the true meaning of the word valuable in terms of how you are as a teammate.
Mm-hmm. True.
I brought this up. I was on with Doug and Wolf this morning. And again, I don't want this to happen. But if you ever saw a prolonged stretch of this Suns team without Chris Paul, you'd see a much different looking team. That, to me, is value.
Without a doubt. We saw
Steve Nash lock up an MVP 1 year in Phoenix by missing games. They were riding high. He got hurt. All of a sudden, they were infinitely beatable.
Yeah.
And they lost a lot of games, and he came back, and they picked up right where they left off. Dave Pasch of ESPN, he called the game last night, that epic contest between the Jazz and the Suns. And he was on with Doug and Wolf this morning, and he was asked that question about Chris Paul and where he could fit into the MVP conversation.
Mark Jackson was talking about this on the air last night, that it's disrespectful that Devin Booker and Donovan Mitchell aren't in the MVP conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at this point, if you're telling me LeBron James is going to be out for a significant amount of time, Nikola Jokic becomes the front runner in my mind, but you've got to consider several other people. And if the Suns end up finishing with one of the top two or three best records in the NBA, we need to seriously start looking at both Chris Paul and Devin Booker, because this is now an excellent team.
Yeah, I think Dave Pasch makes a great point there. And we had this conversation, I don't know, I want to say a month ago on this show, when that's when Jarrett and I made our lunch bet about the Suns having a top eight finisher in the MVP voting.
Oh.
You remembered that, right, Jarrett? I know it's in your day planner. Yeah. I know you wrote it down.
He's like, my day what? What's that?
That's still borderline Not that they don't deserve it, but it's still borderline with all the names people are saying.
No, but I even said at the time of that discussion, I think I was considering Booker to be the more legit MVP candidate. Mm-hmm. And I agree with Dave Pasch. He should be getting more love than he's getting. But right now, if I had to vote for the Suns MVP, I would vote for Chris Paul.
So would I.
And here's a parallel. So the 92-93 Suns team adds Charles Barkley.
Uh-huh.
The team goes from an okay team to a championship contender. Charles Barkley wins the MVP. The 2004-2005 Suns add Steve Nash. The team goes from an okay team to a championship contender. Steve Nash wins MVP. This team, not even an okay team before Chris Paul got here. Obviously, there's other factors on why they're taking this leap, but that alone should be a huge reason why he's in the conversation. If history has taught us anything, he's the difference.
I agree.
And there's so much more than stats that you're right, like you said, that he impacts the team.
But the difference is, you say stats, they still do matter in the eyes of the voters.
Mm-hmm.
Jokic on any given night can go for a triple-double. Damian Lillard could go off for 50 points any single night. Giannis is a statistical freak. Embiid, same way. He's got, you know, the number of 35-point games he has this year is astounding. Steph Curry, we know about this. So
Jokic is on a team that was already really good and that's not even as good as they were last year.
Sure. Well, I think they are now.
James Harden is on a team with... They just showed last night they could just fit in any one of those superstars and the team is great. Like Kevin Durant could go on a run now without James Harden there.
You know this,
Jarrett.
We all know this. I think you're making a compelling point, but stats do matter. And when Steve Nash won those back-to-back MVPs, outside of Phoenix, Arizona, what was the reaction?
He didn't deserve it. He only averaged 17 points a game.
Right.
Shaq had way better numbers.
Yeah.
It does matter. So I don't think Chris Paul's going to win the MVP, but he's definitely going to finish top eight. So I'm going to order my lunch now.
Yeah.
Do you want to make a new bet then? Who finishes ahead, Chris Paul or Devin Booker?
No, I'm good with the first bet, actually.
Yeah, right. Exactly. All right. I read this. I thought this was interesting. I wanted to see what you thought of it. Quote, some Phoenix fans are frustrated. They see their team having the best season since Steve Nash and Mike D'Antoni revolutionized the game, and they feel disrespected. Those fans focus on stories about how Chris Paul could leave after the season, how other teams out west want to be on the Suns' side of the playoff bracket because they're seen as an easier target. Welcome to life atop the NBA, Suns fans. Gone are the plucky underdogs everyone loved in the bubble. Life on top of the league is often a discussion of what weaknesses could trip up a team in the second round of the playoffs and beyond, and often less on how well you're playing during the doldrums of a season. Consider it a sign you have arrived.
Mm-hmm.
Who wrote that?
I don't know. I don't know.
I feel that was contradictory within its own, the own sentence there, because people disrespecting the Suns is not a sign that you've arrived. It's the exact opposite. It's the sign that people still don't think you've arrived.
Yeah.
Because people are not nitpicking the Lakers and the Brooklyn Nets right now.
I have not seen any story how teams out west want to be in the Suns bracket. Have you?
No, I haven't seen that either.
I haven't seen that.
No. But did you hear from Tim Legler, his projection on ESPN?
Legs, quickly, who wins a best of seven between the Jazz and Suns?
Ooh, I think I would lean toward the Phoenix Suns. I think having two different guys that you just trust to run your offense through at the end of the game. And by the way, another thing in this game that people should have noticed, they can get gritty when they need to. They were unbelievable defensively in the first half, Linda, and their offensive rebounding, the nuts and bolts, hard hat type stuff in the second half was a big factor in this game. So they're not just a finesse offensive team. They can roll their sleeves up when they need to. I saw that out of them tonight. They've got five contenders on their schedule in the next 3 weeks. This was the first one. They took care of the Jazz. Let's see how they stack up against some of these other top teams in the league. But I'm very impressed where Phoenix is. This is more than a good story, Linda. This is a very good team. And they have a legit shot to make some noise now in the West.
Well, the thing is, I agree with Tim Legler. Mm-hmm. I agree with people that say Utah, they're legit. That's a really good basketball team. But going into that game, Bick, we talked about the similarities between these two teams, and that's, again, one of those similarities. Really good to this point in the regular season. A lot of star power to lean on. I like the Suns' depth better than I like Utah's. But the one thing they don't have is that championship pedigree.
Yeah.
So even with the Lakers all banged up and going in the wrong direction right now, when the playoffs roll around and they have LeBron James and Anthony Davis, guess what? They've been through the ringer before.
Yeah.
The Clippers. They don't have a bunch of it, but Kawhi Leonard's done it for two different teams. Been an MVP in the finals for two different teams. Yeah. You know, to some degree, you can rely on him. Now, the question with the Clippers is, how much can you rely on those other guys? Because Paul George continues to be goofy.
Yeah.
But the Suns just are missing that element right now. Denver, I think you could throw into that mix, too. They made a really nice run last year, and they're playing tremendous basketball since the Aaron Gordon. They haven't lost since they got Aaron Gordon.
No, they haven't.
But again, that's the question. Can they get over the hump against those proven commodities? Yeah. Fascinating.
Well, also, and just with Utah specifically, if you compare the two, to me, it seems like the Suns are an even better version of Utah. Like, I like Devin Booker more than Mitchell. I think Chris Paul is better than Mike Conley. Gobert is probably better than DeAndre Ayton right now, but Ayton is playing at least at a comparable level. And then I think the Suns have more depth.
Definitely. Here's the five guys that were active last night for Utah that didn't play. Trent Forrest, Jarrell Brantley, Mie Oni, Ersan Ilyasova, Matt Thomas. Here's the guys that didn't play at the
Ersan
end of the...
Ersan Ilyasova. I haven't heard that name in 10 years.
Well, now you have. Here's the guys that didn't play last night for the Suns. Langston Galloway, Etuan Moore, Tyshawn Alexander, Frank Kaminsky, Jalen Smith. Take Alexander and Smith, rookies, out of the mix. They haven't contributed this year. That's three guys that you've counted on and have delivered for you this season if somebody were to go down. And guys that have found themselves in and out of the rotation. If the Jazz suffer an injury, knock on wood,
yeah.
I'm not saying I'm wishing it to happen, that's a big blow. Who are of those guys, outside of Ilyasova, there's hardly any experience.
By the way, Abdel Nader, you didn't even mention, who's been a big contributor, and he's injured right now.
Because his name is Abdul. That's why I didn't mention
Abdul. I said Abdel Nader.
You said Abdel Nader.
I didn't. You're hearing what you want.
If you were going to put Abdel Nader versus Abdul Nader, how would you size that up, Jared?
Abdel Nader.
You ever heard of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Jarrett?
that's spelled
Mahmoud Abdel Rauf.
Dude, you're getting an Abdel.
Paula Abdel.
Abdel the funky homo sapien.
New York Jets pass rusher Abdel Salam.
Yeah, so listen, last night was great because the Suns got into a street fight and they won it. They gave up a late three, and you couldn't be mad at it because Jay Crowder made a smart, I believe, defensive play to avoid all contact with him.
Plus, that was a long three-pointer.
Yeah, yeah. And Donovan Mitchell did the right dance on that play. He zigged right where the Suns were zagging and created a great shot for himself. That didn't stop him, and they came back, and Devin Booker missed a couple of shots late in the fourth quarter that had me going, oh, come on, man.
Well,
then he came back in the overtime and did well.
That last shot, though, there were a couple things I didn't like from Devin Booker last night. I think he was pressing early. He had six turnovers in the first quarter, which is really hard to overcome, but he did it. But even after Mitchell hits the three to tie, and the Suns get the last crack at it with 10 seconds to go, you pretty much know it's going to be Booker's show.
Yeah.
I thought that was at least an amount of settling. You feel good with Booker, the ball in Booker's hands, but what I love about having that double-headed option with the game on the line is both of those guys can get whatever two-point shot they want. Now, obviously, you're not going to take that all the way in with Rudy Gobert protecting the rim, but you could have got a much higher percentage shot. And Booker didn't hit a three last night. But he's strong enough to back down a defender and get to about 12 to 15 feet and knock down that little jumper. Now, again, it didn't cost him. He bounced back.
No, he bounced
scored
back.
A quick bucket in overtime that really, I thought, set the tone for the overtime. But maybe just settling there.
You were getting a lot of FaceTime after the game during the post-game interviews, Vinny. But during the one with Chris Paul, I loved it because Chris Paul was like, he was just like, man, that was fun. And it was like, I didn't expect to hear him say that, but it was very reassuring. that he looked at that kind of game that felt really stressful and intense.
Well, and that's,
but
part,
that's
of,
fun.
Part of his leadership, too, is there's a tendency for coaches, and Monty Williams, and I'm not blaming for him for that, was to stick to those substitution patterns. And Chris Paul is like, no, I'm not coming out. He played the last 17 minutes of the game.
Yeah, I know. And he lost some heavy minutes, man.
And he talked about that being a plus.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That felt good.
There you go.
You look
now,
good.
Now we want to hear it.
Yeah. No, I'm it's still just a game. You know what I mean? Like, it don't win a series or whatnot. I think it was good for us to get a game like that under our belt. I've been telling Coach, you know, we got to play some heavy minutes. You know, so we're used to it going into the playoffs. So it's good to get nice, intense games like this where you got to think.
I love that answer, too.
Yeah, so do I.
I agree with it completely. They needed a game like that. And they might get another game like that tonight. I'm curious to see how they bounce back.
Yeah, so am I. Tonight is really going to be the heat check for this basketball team.
Uh-huh. Because there's a chance we could be on the air tomorrow at 12:25 on Friday talking about the Suns heading into the weekend being a half game out of the number one spot in the West.
Wow.
Utah's back home to take on Portland. Utah had that same workload that the Suns had last night. They played in the same intense basketball game.
Mm-hmm.
Portland's playing pretty good basketball. Not saying it will happen. I'm just saying there's a chance. So you're telling me there's a chance.
It's just so hard to wrap your brain around this turnaround. It's fabulous.
Starting next Monday, we're giving you the chance every weekday to win $500. Text the word bonus to 620-620 to register and listen for your name at 735, 135, or 335 for your chance at the Arizona Sports signing bonus. Once again, that's bonus to 620-620. After a win like that, you bet your sweet Bippy we're going to continue talking Suns. We'll be joined by Kendrick Perkins of ESPN next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. It is the Thursday edition of Bickley and Murata, live from the Auction Community Studios here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Appreciate you tuning in. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Bickley underscore Murata. Trying to catch up with Kendrick Perkins, who has been, for my money, one of the major drum beaters for the Phoenix Suns all season.
Oh, yeah.
In a positive way.
He's been a friend of the Valley, I'll say that much.
He's loving it, by the way. Did you see his Twitter feed last night? Where he put out there, tried to warn y'all before the season that this Suns team was going to be serious, and that they are. This was an impressive win tonight, led by the point god CP3 and a rising superstar in Booker. By the way, they're currently sitting in that number two seed in the West. Carry on.
Wow.
Wow. It feels so, it feels great. This feels like the Nash era, when after a nationally televised game, the whole city was talking about the team. Even walking out of the arena last night, there was a few more people. Took a little bit longer to get out of the garage.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. But the people walking around, you know, that were exiting the arena, it's kind of, you know, fist bumping. Hey, let's go, Suns! There's a growing buzz about all of this.
Yeah, there is, and there's a story that's playing out that we're not going to get into because it's really a political story. But there's a story out there that the number that the men's championship basketball game drew, Gonzaga, who'd they play again? Baylor versus Baylor, drew a big, big number, and there are people out there comparing it to the NBA Finals ratings from a year ago and saying, see, this woke NBA is not what anybody wants. What I am here to say is that this has become a real thorny issue for a lot of sports teams, sports leagues. It's really good to have a basketball team like the Suns that would transcend any of that. I would really have a hard time believing that anybody would hold the NBA's politics or what they have been doing against this basketball team. You know what I mean? If you were in Phoenix, if you were a basketball fan in Phoenix, I couldn't see turning your back on this basketball team based on principle. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, I guarantee you people have.
Okay.
And it's probably years in the making. But that's not to say, I mean, isn't there an amount, to use the term that you used, woke? That's not happening in college athletics either.
Well, I mean, that's the false. Go ahead, Sarah.
Viewership. I lost words. Viewership dropped across the board in every single men's sport. The only sports that saw growth, the WNBA and women's college basketball. And you're trying to tell me people don't think the W is quote unquote woke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So please, it has nothing to do with that. People had other things to do in 2020.
Yeah. It's a real tricky, sticky matter that a lot of people get very, very upset about. I think here in Phoenix that the beauty of this basketball team is it's going to pull people in who might feel that way that I just described, or might have sworn off the Suns because of Robert Sarver 5 years ago. You're going to pull those people back in. How could it not?
Especially in a town like this where it's been 10 years. I mean, I find it hard not to get caught up in stuff like this. And that's just who I am. But I know too, like I know a lot of Suns fans who were fans at one time who got caught up, swept away by being a championship contender year in, year out during the 7 seconds or less, or during the early 90s run with Charles Barkley, that just aren't as diehard or passionate about it when the team isn't good.
Yeah.
It takes something.
Right.
It takes a commitment to be behind a team that's not very good.
Oh, it sure does.
There's a lot of questioning of it. Why do you do this to yourself?
Yeah, right.
I mean, that was the argument for years with the Cubs. They had the most loyal fan base ever, and people
and I'm sure a lot of people preyed on it.
Yes, and media people like you in Chicago were asking the question, why are you like this?
Yeah.
Why can't you send a message
What's
to this
so
ownership?
What's so lovable about losing?
Look, I'm very, very happy right now, and nothing's been accomplished to this point. It's just starting to get really fun for me.
Yeah.
But I'm really happy for the people who have been there and agonize over it, and they go back and forth on Twitter talking about a 19-win NBA team. That's who I'm happy for.
That's the
people that had the fortitude, and it takes fortitude to stick with a team like that.
Yeah,
in my opinion.
There's no doubt about it.
I think there's two versions of fans to be happy for. One is the hardcore fan that lived through all the glory days of the 80s and 90s and 2000s, and now has just been waiting and waiting and waiting a decade to get back there. And then there is the fan base that have just been fans over the last 10 years. You know, people who are 20 years old or 25 years old or whatever, they might have started being fans in the Devin Booker era or just prior to that. And they've never seen a good team.
That is true. I mean, Devin Booker to me has been one of those players that, even though it was a bad team, his style of play, his level of accomplishment and, just everything about him, that's enough to draw in fans.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about this a couple of years ago, Bick, where I was starting to see when Devin Booker was becoming a prolific scorer and the real big-time fans around basketball that weren't Suns fans, just follow the game day in, day out, they were starting to buzz about him. And I talked about how when the Warriors were at the height of their powers, when they would roll into town, people would show up an hour before the game just to watch them warm up.
Yeah. Yes.
The Suns are on that path.
I've said this before many, many times. For any pro sports team in the Valley to transcend, to become the water cooler topic, they've got to be entertaining and they've got to be really good. Not just okay good, really good. We've seen good Diamondbacks teams not really... they draw bigger crowds, but it doesn't blow up. It doesn't just become this all-encompassing communal event. I think this basketball team is going to be that all-encompassing communal event. And I'm curious what sports bars were like last night. If there was some of that kind of energy like you felt last night in the arena. I'm stunned that 5,100 fans could make as much noise as they did last night.
Mm-hmm.
But that is going to be a side story, because yesterday was the first game with the increased attendance. And the increased attendance at the game, it was going to continue to happen.
Mm-hmm.
The increased opening of and repopulation of sports bars and restaurants and all these kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
All this is going to coincide in parallel the Suns' push for the playoffs and run into the playoffs.
It is.
And it's all going to culminate sort of like a year and a half of this city, not just the city, obviously the whole country, but this city not being able to be part of sports is all going to culminate with this playoff run.
You're right about that, but it's going to be a year and a half on top of a 10-year playoff drive.
Right.
So it's going to be insane. And I think last night was the first real indication of how this town is going to react. I think home court advantage is going to be very significant for some teams in this year's postseason if you get the numbers back to that level. Because A, there are fan bases like Phoenix who have been waiting for something like this. And B, a lot of these players only vaguely remember what full-on energy feels like in a basketball arena, and it's gonna juice them up good.
I've been to every game, Bic, this year. That was the first time, even for a moment, it's felt that way.
Yeah. I've seen it from other people who were at the game that this was the best they've felt in a long time, and it's only going to get better as more fans are allowed into the stadium, the arena, and allowed to kind of become part of this, because that is what this is all about. When you go to games with teams like this, you're attaching yourself to the story. You want to be part of that energy exchange. It's fundamentally different than just cheering for a team. When you get a team that speaks to a community, going to a game, it makes people feel like they're on board, like they're truly part of what's happening. Because you know what? You are.
Uh-huh.
You really are.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be really profound in this market. I'm sure it's going to be really profound in Salt Lake City. What are the Jazz? How many fans are the Jazz?
I don't know what they're at, but they were one of the teams that when the season started, they were allowing fans.
Okay. Do you remember when Karl Malone and John Stockton took that team to the NBA Finals? What a nightmare it was to play in the Delta Center.
Uh-huh.
Okay. It just incredibly loud.
It showed that in the Last Dance documentary, how surprisingly almost abusive those fans were to the opposing team.
Oh, it's
the last I can see, by the way, is the Jazz are allowing 5,600.
Okay.
So right around the same.
Yeah. I would suggest that, yeah, Milwaukee, there's going to be some cities that really get a huge lift from this because their players have really missed it.
But guess what? There's only going to be one team in this year's playoffs that hasn't been there in 10 years.
Yep, it's true.
Unless Sacramento gets hot.
Yeah, that's true. Wouldn't that be something?
All right, coming up next, we are 3 weeks away exactly from the day one, round one of the NFL draft. Lots of options for the Cardinals at 16. We'll go over some of those possibilities next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
Yeah, like I said, 3 weeks away from the start of the NFL draft. It'll be Thursday, April 29th. We're going to crank up our draft coverage as we get closer here on Bickley and Murata and all throughout the station. As you will find out tomorrow, if you are a faithful reader or if you're not a faithful reader of it, here's your invitation to become one of the mock draft tracker. It'll be unveiled tomorrow, the latest. Week 14 of the mock draft tracker will be out on the ArizonaSports.com on Friday afternoon. You'll see that cornerback is still the most likely. Not saying it's going to happen, but if you believe mock drafts, you believe prognostications, the Cardinals are taking a corner at 16. Could be any number of guys. Some of the names that pop up, obviously J.C. Horn from South Carolina pops up a lot. Caleb Fartley from Virginia Tech pops up a lot. A little less, Patrick Surtain of Alabama, he pops up. Greg Newsom from Northwestern pops up. Tyson Campbell from Georgia has shown up a few times. Caleb Fartley is an interesting one because from what I can gather, most people don't have him as the consensus top corner, and he's got a bit of a red flag. He had back surgery not too long ago. He did an interview this week with Chris Sims on NBC Sports that he said his back injury is little risk for a huge reward, and that any team should think twice before selecting Surtain, J.C. Horn, or any other quarterback ahead of him. The quote is, quote, "But best believe any team that takes a corner over me, you know I'm a dog," he said. "That's going to tick me off. It's going to tick me off. I'm going to try to do them like Randy Moss did them, you know, when they let him fall. I'm going to try to high step all the way to the end zone with the ball in my hands and to point at my back when I get in there. That's the type of dude I am. I'll be suited up this fall, and I can't wait."
You know, it's really good that humility isn't part of the program with NFL draft prospects. I'm sorry. I admire bravado and all that, but to me, it's just so played out, making the people who don't draft me first at my position pay for their mistakes.
You know what I'm still doing to this day, Beck? All the girls that didn't go out with me in high school.
Yeah.
I'm proving to them every day what they missed out on. Look at all this.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
You're confirming every day.
Yeah.
You're confirming every day what they missed out on.
They're like, Vince, who?
Yeah. So to me, it's a little played out because it's very disrespectful to the process because the NFL has shown it chews up and spits out a lot of rookies. And even the ones you think are going to make it, the bust ratio in the NFL is preposterous. So if you're a young guy saying, I'm going to do this, that, and the third, you're going to make people in the league roll their eyes.
Yeah, you should have that confidence. Maybe you shouldn't speak it.
That's it.
We all loved it on the Friday after the first round in 2018 when Josh Rosen talked about mistakes.
Yeah, we loved it.
We're like, oh, man, I love the way this kid is made.
Uh-huh.
Oh, he's going to be awesome.
Right.
He's going to wreck this league.
Johnny Manziel, I'm going to wreck this league.
Yeah.
Let's go wreck this league. Okay, that's the best way to get your career off on the wrong foot. Because already now, people who have done it and populate the NFL are going to be thinking that you're a joker for assuming that it's easy. And that might not be your intention. It probably isn't. It's probably just a defense mechanism because you want to show people, you should draft me. And because there's money attached. The lower you go, the less you make. So people are very vested in where they go.
Yeah.
The smart players really should just realize that you get drafted by a good organization, and that can be a game changer
sure.
for you. But the Randy Moss thing was, I think, really the first instance of that. The guy who vowed to pay back everybody who didn't draft him.
And did. Yeah, I mean, he had the career to back it up. But that doesn't mean Caleb Farley won't be in the mix at 16 for the Cardinals should they stay there.
Mm-hmm.
They might have their option, especially with the quarterbacks getting pushed. This is a very offensive, heavy draft in the first round, especially toward the top of the first round. So the Cardinals could be in a very, very advantageous situation as another run scored in Denver, and it's 4-0 Rockies in the second inning.
Oh. Terrific.
We had Mel Kiper Jr. on yesterday, and if you haven't listened, Mel is a treasure.
He was breathtaking yesterday.
Yeah. But
that's
here he is
to me. My jaw was down.
Here he is breaking down the possibilities uh-huh. of the corners, the top three, Surtain, Horn, and Farley for the Cardinals at 16, should they go down that route. This is a little bit long, but trust me, it's worth it.
I think Surtain probably could say he's the most complete. It doesn't mean he's the best because, you know, he's beaten and covered some. He missed a tackle here and there. But, yeah, he's a better tackler than Caleb Farley. He's not quite as good in coverage as J.C. Horn. You could argue J.C. Horn could be the most complete and the mm-hmm. best of that group had Farley not had the second back surgery. And I think that's where Caleb Farley comes into play. He's a great cover guy. He's a former wide receiver, former high school quarterback. Had an ACL in 2017, then the back surgery in 2019, then he had another back surgery prior to the draft. So skill-wise, Justin Fuente, I talked to back in August, the head coach at Virginia Tech, and he loves the kid's talent and potential. Long, athletic, great ball skills. Had to get a little tougher. Had he played this year, you would have needed to see better tackling. But I think cover-wise, he has few peers. And like I say, Surtain, if you want a guy fundamentally, technically sound, tremendously well-coached with Nick, who works with the defensive backs and coaches them hard, and then the great pro day. And then you have, like I say, Horn, son of Joe Horn, you know, press corner, really good cover guy. Yeah, you can match him up against the number one receiver, and he'll do a good job. Everybody talks about what he did with Kyle Pitts. So all three corners are worthy of going in the top 20. Just depends on which one of those three you deem the best. And like I say, it's mixed opinion around the league on how these guys rank 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah, no consensus. That's where I'd love to have access to teams' boards mm-hmm. to see how they rank. And there's several different positions where that applies. Obviously, the quarterback position this year in terms of preference, I think everybody pretty much would have Trevor Lawrence number one, maybe not. The wide receiver position, whether it's Chase or Smith or Waddle or Elijah Moore from Ole Miss is making a push now to be a first-round pick. And certainly at the cornerback spot, there's so many different positions where you have that difference of opinion. I think that's what makes the whole process fun.
Yeah, I agree. And going back to Caleb Farley for a minute, it's Patrick Surtain is a terrific player. I don't know how anybody could say I am by far the best quarterback available, especially when you're coming off back surgery. I don't know. I'm sorry. That was just one last random thought I wanted to say about that.
Can you make that claim about anything in your life? I am easily, without doubt, the best at fill in the blank.
He's the best column writer in the Valley.
Okay, I'll take that.
You probably think that. Well deserved.
I don't want to say it.
He lets the promo say it for him.
Yeah.
Right? That's what I'm saying. Yeah, exactly. I knew I heard that somewhere.
That's Jared didn't make that up.
I heard that somewhere.
Vinny is the absolute best at imitating Jim Rome.
He is.
Making bland food.
Right.
Best at trivia.
And best at trivia.
Not the best at trivia. Best at certain kinds of trivia.
And
the
he's
best
also
at Vinny Joe trivia.
And Jared, are the best at.
Vince is the best PA guy, too.
Phoenix Suns!
I cringe when I hear that, because that was like from my first game.
It was from
I was
your first
so,
game.
I was yelling, and
yeah.
I think I still yell, but it sounds different.
What am I the best at?
Uh-huh.
Coming up next. Sean Miller is out as head coach at Arizona, so what will he do next? We'll explore in social studies, and maybe we'll explore what Jared's the best at, too. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.